Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from 970 ESPN and Steelers Nation Radio, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves chilling, talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. He's Dave Bryan at SteelersDepot.com, the place to get your latest and greatest Steelers information. I'm David Todd of ESPN Pittsburgh and the Steelers Radio Network. It's Season 7, Episode 33, and the Steelers are on a bye week coming off a loss to the New England Patriots that leaves them at 4-3. And if you're looking for a silver lining, I think it's, Dave, that this is a banged-up Steelers team that had seven injured inactives. They didn't have to give anybody they didn't choose to give anybody a helmet who wasn't healthy. But it's a situation where we saw Ben Roethlisberger practice yesterday. We see Ladarius Green get some work for the first time as a Steeler. And when we look at the injured list, Dave, I feel like every one of these guys could literally be ready to go by the game in Baltimore in 2 weeks. And if not, certainly you would think by Dallas the week after. So it's not ideal. It's not quite where they want to be. And they're coming off a loss to the Patriots and a bad loss to the Dolphins, but maybe now things are finally pointing in the right direction.
Yeah, I it's so positive right now that I looking at the line here. I was about to take bye and lay the points on the Steelers, but the news being positive, yes, I mean it really is encouraging. You got Cameron Hayward. I don't know if we know for sure whether or not Cameron Hayward will play after the bye, but you know I think that's he has every intention to. Of course, he injured that hamstring against the Jets, has missed the two games since then. Of course, the bye week will be three. One would think and speculate that the Ravens game would be when he would make his return. And boy, does this defense really need him as well too? Roethlisberger, it goes without saying, he was able to get out there and throw the football around on Tuesday. You know, he said during his weekly radio show that he plans on practicing or hopes to practice next week. So, you know, I guess we'll wait and see what Mike Tomlin says Tuesday during his weekly press conference, kind of laying out what may or may not happen and try to read a little more into it from there. I think Marcus Wheaton is expecting to return for the Ravens game. I think Marcus Gilbert has said he plans on being on the field as well too. And then really, who's else? Who else you got out there? You got Shamarco Thomas, really a special teams player with that groin. Cody Wallace with the knee. I mean, we'll see. Not really big pieces of the overall puzzle there. Sammy Coates, is he going to need surgery on that finger during the bye week? You know, how is that going to affect him moving forward? Really kind of minor questions at this point. But if they could get those top, you know, four so-called, you know, starters back for this Ravens game, you know, that will definitely, you know, help. And let's not forget too that this is a Ravens team that went into the bye limping quite a bit.
Yeah, it is. And Dave, no Mike Tomlin a press conference yesterday, so maybe a little bit less to discuss in that respect. But some interesting stuff that came out. And why don't we talk about some of the kind of wrap up the game. And I think Alex had a post up on your site that talked about the touchdown, which I think was really interesting. I put some stuff on our webpage at the station about Tom Brady talking about the game and his thoughts going in and what he saw and some of the different things. So let's get into that. Why don't we start with the Gronk touchdown, because that's something that you, me, and the whole world – really kind of felt like maybe Sean Davis misplayed that. And I guess Carnell Lake spoke after practice yesterday to Mike Prasuta of the DVD Morning Show and said, you know, Sean Davis more or less did the right thing, and Robert Golden was supposed to carry Rob Gronkowski up the field, and it was really his responsibility. He's got to make that play.
Yeah, and
Wow is my short answer to ask Robert Golden to do that in that type of situation.
Yeah, that's a tough chore. And when you go back to what we said on the show on Monday there, you know, it looked like it was quarter half, and during our talk of that, I said, well, you know, the only way that's not going to be Robert Golden's fault probably is if he felt that he should have had help over the top there. And turns out, you know, to listen to the comment or to read the comments that Carnell Lake had from Monday or from Tuesday, that was Robert Golden all the way. So, you know, definitely some cover two there in that situation. I believe Lake talked about how Sean Davis had to widen a little bit because of the outside. You know, we talked about, well, did Artie Burns diving kind of inside on that underneath stuff, you know, cause Davis to react to that? Well, I mean, you know, judging by what Lake said, this was a cover two. And, you know, Gronk, I believe I even mentioned the other day when Gronk talked during his post game, he talked about how it was split safeties on the play, and that he was pretty much alluding to that it was that it was cover two during his post game press conference. So more of, I guess you could call it, David, a cover two with a, you know, with more of a Tampa kind of middle that Golden was the one that had to carry Gronk up the seam. And, you know, that's a tough play to make for sure. And especially when Brady really put that ball where only Gronkowski was going to catch it. And maybe that's why we don't see the Steelers play so much cover two. And I believe even Belichick or Brady has said in the past, you know, that's kind of why you don't play cover two against them. But I mean, look, you're just as susceptible in cover three. And how many times have we seen the Steelers get beat in cover three down the middle of the thirds as well? You know, so
yeah, you know what's interesting is here's the Brady quote. This is a quote. He was on WEEI. He has a show like Ben does a weekly show on Mondays. And this is what he said about the TD pass. I thought that was a great job by Josh, meaning McDaniel, the offensive coordinator, just kind of understanding how the flow of the game was. A few things started to reveal itself, and we thought that ultimately would be a good play just based on the coverages they were playing. And Gronk had 21, meaning Golden, who's their safety, but he was playing linebacker on that particular play, which remember that line, because we're going to get back to that. And he had a man-to-man, man-for-man, and Gronk really split the defense, and there were still two safeties back there, and Gronk split them both and was right there at the hash there and made a great catch and run. That was a big play in the game because they had a lot of momentum, because there were a bunch of series there in the second and third quarter where we didn't do much, and they ended up making it a one-point game. We handed off to LeGarrette a bunch, and he made a bunch of plays, and then Gronk had a big touchdown. That was a big play, blah, blah, blah. Okay, so you know, Dave, when the Steelers are going to play that defense, and I'm shocked. I didn't look again, but you told me on Monday that Sean Davis only played three plays, and maybe he did get benched after that. But if you're going to play that defense, wouldn't you want to flip those two guys and have Sean Davis being the linebacker, you know, type guy who runs with Gronk, and have Robert Golden be the safety up high?
Well, I would think so. I mean, Sean Davis, you know, his final season at Maryland, of course, had to play corner because of injuries to their safety. He's more of a cornerback than any other safeties are right now. So if you're going to go big like that, and look, he started the season that way, kind of playing more in the slot. And, of course, during the later stages of training camp after Cinquez Goldston went down, and then all of a sudden after, what, the first four or five games there, Keith Butler comes out and says, well, we're going to start simplifying this for Sean Davis, i.e. move him back to safety more and pretty much take playing time away from him. Whereas, to me, if you wanted to focus on one position on him, why not focus more on the position of him being a slot player more so than safety for times such as this? Either play him in the slot, or, you know, roll Justin Gilbert out there in certain situations and let him have a slice of that pie as well. Because what down was that? Do you remember? I'm drawing a blank of what down that was. that the touchdown to Gronk went on. I'm
trying. Third and seven.
All right, so you're not worried so much about the run, right? Are you worried about the run on third and seven?
No.
Okay, then if you're going to go matchup on a situation, why do you even need a safety acting as a linebacker on that play anyway? Why not roll a guy like Justin Gilbert in? And let him take a swing at Gronkowski in that situation if you're going to let somebody carry him up the seam. So, yeah, Golden probably not the best. Now obviously you don't want Lawrence Timmons carrying Gronkowski right. up the seam, but if you're to rank those guys from Justin Gilbert, Sean Davis to Timmons and on down of who you want in there on that play. Yeah, you know, Sean Davis would be probably pretty high on that list if that's all you're asking him to do there.
Yeah, I mean, I don't get it. And that's the thing is, you know, when we've critiqued the Steelers for the, you know, so many years that we've been doing this, we're not usually having conversations about is the guy playing the right position? Did they put it in right? I mean, we can debate whether, you know, Lawrence Simmons should be on the field and passing downs. That's about as close as we get into – you know, personnel conversations, and I'll still have that one. But I just, you know, when it doesn't make sense to me because they did it against Kansas City with Travis Kelce. We saw Justin Gilbert do it to hand fight the guy off the line of scrimmage, and now Justin Gilbert's not on the field. Sean Davis is barely on the field, and now he's playing a, you know, he's not playing a physical position at the in terms of that particular play and that defense. It just doesn't make sense to me.
Yeah, and you go back to, and I know several people are probably kind of agitated at this point. You go back to last year, you acquired Brandon Boykin. He obviously didn't see playing time until later on in the year. You know, for whatever reason, you know, there's a lot of different.
Right, we'll never know.
A lot of different narratives out there, and
by the way, is he in the league?
Yeah, you remember he got in. He was with the Bears and he suffered that what was it, tricep or chest injury or something, pectoral injury, I think, and he's on IR. Brandon Boykin is, but now you go out and you get a guy like Justin Gilbert, who, by the way, I mean, one of his traits, if you go back and remember the tape in college with him, was him being able to at least run with guys and mirror some routes. You know, that's where a lot of his interceptions came. Now, probably not the best guy press right now against good receivers, but, you know, I don't view Gronkowski as a guy that's really going to juke you out of your shoes off of the line. I think Gilbert is a guy that you can match up there and get a little bit of a bump and then just, you know, carry him down the field there. What's interesting about that play, that touchdown, is I want to go back through the all 22 view of this thing to see if I can see exactly pinpoint maybe the play in the first half or two where Brady and Josh McDaniels had the aha moment, you know, of, okay, well, we did this and they did that. If we do this, then we should get that. You usually kind of can find those plays, if you know what I'm talking about. I mean, because that's obviously what they're over there doing, you know, looking at the pads and stuff like that. But
I think it probably had to be kind of two or three plays when they saw that they finally took Timmons off the field. And you remember that first drive they had in the second half, which is when that happened for the first time, I think. You know, Timmons comes off, and they go three and out. And they said, okay, bang, we'll start this drive. And when they started that drive, LeGarrette Blount for 11 yards, LeGarrette Blount for 25 yards. So I think that had to be it. They made a quick adjustment to what the Steelers did to adjust in the second half by taking Timmons off the field. And they said, all right, we're going to run the ball. And they ran it really successfully. And then I'm trying to remember the sequence that led to the Gronkowski touchdown. But, I mean, it was only a five-play drive. It was Blount, Blount. And then maybe he got stuffed. I think there was a run play and a pass play on the two plays that led it to be third and seven. But I'm guessing that was it. They saw they went three and out, and they decided they would adjust to the Timmons adjustment.
Yeah, they got in that area too, that 40-yard area, and that's usually when you like to try to maybe take a deep shot or so, because they were at the 36 on that third and seven play, and you know, as you mentioned, leading up to that point. Those, you know, circle those two runs that LeGarrette Blount had, because, you know, we talked earlier about how Boswell had, and boy, did Cameron Hayward light into that defense.
We should talk about that.
Get into that defense there. You know, after Boswell had hit that 46-yard field goal in the 14-13 game, and of course the Steelers had already had a defensive stop to open up the quarter. You know, Cam and probably the rest of us are out there, you know, watching the game and thinking, boy, you know, you're only 1 point down. If you get a nice stop here, you can really, really turn the tide of this game. And as you mentioned, it went LeGarrette Blount 11 yards. It went LeGarrette Blount 25 yards. Circle those two runs right there. For some reason, you know, the failure to stop him, you know, to allow him to get 36 yards, and all of a sudden they're at the Steelers' 39-yard line. Blount up the middle for no gain, so they toughen up a little bit there. Then pass over to the right to Julian Edelman, only gains him 3 yards. And then you're thinking, okay, great, exactly what the Steelers' defense wants to do. They got Brady in 3rd and 7, and then you give up the explosive play touchdown. And then kind of to pile on Golden moving forward, you know, the other deep pass to Rob Gronkowski, they left Golden one-on-one in that situation in a cover one as well, too. And Gronk, of all people, just spun Golden into the ground like a top and turned him around. So that was a real cheap free play. And then of course that ended in the five-yard LeGarrette Blount touchdown. And at that point, you just, oh my, you know, they probably pretty much over at this point. But yeah, back to, you know, you say talk about Hayward comments there. Look, I have no issue with a guy not playing in a game because of injury, especially your defensive captain just kind of really tearing into those guys. Now, however, when and if he gets back here for this game against the Ravens, there better not be any big runs over to that side that he was responsible for.
Yeah, I mean, the thing that surprised me is when you use the word quit, that's a really damning word. And one of the things, I didn't see it. I didn't see the Steelers quit in this game. Maybe they got beat. Maybe they didn't, you know, do exactly what they wanted to do. Maybe they missed assignments. But, you know, I didn't see lack of effort. I asked Mike Tomlin about this specifically after the Eagles game. He got asked about it against after the Miami game. And I think it's fair to say one of the things I've not seen, I don't know that I've ever seen it in the Mike Tomlin era, is the team quitting. And so I just think that's a dangerous word to use. Cam Hayward is smart as anybody on that team intellectually. He's a very well-respected guy in that locker room. I was really surprised he used that word, having not being on the field, that he used that word about his peers. And I guess Shazier said some things as well. I didn't hear those specifically. I heard Cam's words. I got to tell you, I was really surprised.
Yeah, Shazier said something to the line like, we played like garbage or something like that.
Yeah, he said our defense is garbage, yeah.
And Keith Butler came out reportedly, I haven't heard, but I've read some of the comments saying, no, he doesn't think the guys quit. I don't think they quit. I just think you got a lot of guys in there that, hey, well, Mike Tomlin said after the game, right, the key things, not getting off the ball and not
off blocks, off the blocks.
Yeah, off the blocks and not making tackles and not stopping a run when you had to. And that's exactly right. You know, for as good a game as Jarvis played in the first half, was it really as good in the second half? Kind of getting blocked down inside there. And we've talked for several weeks now, you know, with these corners, i.e. Artie Burns, you know, coming up and being able to function in kind of these crack and replace type situations. When the safety, you know, gets cracked, you got to be the one to come in and fill and force that thing back inside to help. And oh yeah, you have to have help inside when he does that. So you know, it is a bit concerning. I didn't see any quit. You know, you hear these people talk all the time. Boy, the Steelers lacked heart. They lacked effort. You know, look, if a coach really saw a player lacking heart or lacking effort and he didn't jettison that player, you know, right away, you definitely can't have players out there. Now, can you have players getting wore down? Yeah, boy, did we see that in the game against the Dolphins, right? Out there in that heat in the second half on some of those longer drives. they looked wore down, hands on the hips. I think Mike Tomlin even kind of had to take a time out there to kind of give those guys a little bit of a breather there. No, I don't think it's effort or heart, or I think it's technique and, you know, not whipping the guy's butt across from you when you really need to the most. And you know, it is concerning right now. Not only was this defense, the pass defense, concerning, you know, in the first several games, now you have 2 weeks in a row of this team getting run on. And, David, I've crunched a few numbers looking at this team on first down. You just cannot give up 5 yards of play on first down and expect to your defense to get off the field come third down, because you might not even get to a third down when it comes to that. And, you know, I kind of want to move forward here and talking about the NEA stats. And I don't know, Dave, you've heard me talk about the adjusted net yards per passing attempt stat for years now, and you're probably tired of it. I don't know how much credence you put into it.
I think it's significant.
And I don't know how many people listening or reading the site put into it, but, you know, I think there's a lot that can be said with these numbers. And historically, I love looking back at after so many weeks, you know, especially closing in on the first half of the season, to see where an offensive or a defensive adjusted net yards per passing attempt stat is, to see what happened, how the rest of the year played out. And let me tell you, the Steelers' number right now after the first 7 games is 7 point, where is it? 7.11, I think. I just lost my place here. 7.12, and that is extremely high. If you go back all the way to 1982, David, and that's a long, long time. There, you know, if you look back after the first 7 games of the season, of the 136 teams that have made the Final Four dating back to 1982, no team has had a defensive NEA number of 7.00 or more after the first 7 games. And there are only 2 teams that went on to play in the Super Bowl that did have a number greater than 7.00, and that was the 2012 or 2014 Seattle Seahawks and the 2008 Arizona Cardinals, and both those teams obviously lost the Super Bowl that year. So, look, you know, records and stats are made to be broken. I mean, just look at the World Series last night and the pitcher striking out. How many strikeouts? What, 8 or so in the first whatever innings?
9 outs, yeah.
You know, records are made to be broken. But, you know, you look at this defensive adjusted net yards per passing attempt stat, and you look back at history – basically this team is going to have to rely on Ben Roethlisberger. Not that anybody didn't already know that, but my big concern is if this team gets into the playoffs, can they get past one of those clunkers that an offense, regardless of the team, tends to have sometimes during a playoff run?
Yeah, I mean, I guess the other thing is you hope that, you know, these guys have played, some of these guys, and I'll include Golden in this, Davis and Burns, you know, they've played 7-8 games in their career. And that's what you got. And so hopefully when you're playing game 15, 16, 17, 18, Super Bowl, whatever it is, you're that much more experienced. You're that much more aware of what your responsibilities are. Again, we talked about the Patriots, and one of the things they do is they all know their assignments. They don't blow assignments. And this, if you read any of the coverage of the Patriots game from their writers, from Ben, who was on our show, or, you know, you listen to the comments in the post game, the Patriots played a bit of a sloppy game. You know, we talked about the drop passes, the penalties, some of the things they did, the punt. You know, if we were flipping sides and right, you know, doing Patriots Depot, we would have killed the dude who screwed up that punt at the end of the half, not the punter, the guy who was down there and kicked the ball into the end zone when he could have just knocked it out of bounds. He played the football. He could have knocked it out of bounds. He just assumed it was out and was just lax about it. That cost him 3 and could have cost him 7. Because the Steelers were going to start on the 6-yard line. And I promise you, if they started on the 6-yard line, they're not kicking a field goal at the end of that first half. So you know, you'd be killing. We would be killing that dude. And you know, there are other things they did, but the reality is, we all walked away from that game going, the Steelers lost by 11, and it wasn't necessarily name your score for the Patriots, but. And the Steelers were right in the game in the third quarter, but I'll tell you, I don't know that anybody thought there were, at any point in that game, you know, the Steelers are going to walk away winners in that game. From the minute the interception happened in the end zone, the Landry Jones's poor throw to Antonio Brown, you know, that was kind of the chance. You get a lead in that game, and maybe you start to hope that they win the game. But I don't know that there was any other time that anybody following this game didn't still think, you say, who's going to win the game? The answer would have been Patriots.
Well, I think after that, when it got back to 14-13 there, I thought my optimism was showing a little bit.
Sure. And that's when they got 11 and 25 from LeGarrette Blount. So it didn't last long.
Right. It especially once he hit Gronk in the end zone, then I poured all that optimism right down the drain there. But yeah, at that point you're thinking, look, I mean, you've shortened the game, so to speak. You have survived a Landry Jones interception. Maybe if you get a stop here and you get one more turnover in the game, which they ultimately did get a turnover later in the game. And yeah, you're right. If we reverse this thing, and if we were Patriots Depot and the Foxborough podcast or whatever, then we would be talking about, boy, you know, the Patriots kept the Steelers around. They took two turnovers in this game. Brady under pressure a little bit in the first half, had to use his legs to convert those. A couple of drop passes in this game as well. The Patriots really didn't. You know, there were some times they probably should have gotten Le'Veon Bell down on the ground. What's up with the tackling, you know, there? Not physical enough. Antonio Brown busted us for a big explosive play down the right side. How could we let a backup quarterback like Landry Jones kind of function the way that he did? We didn't get any sacks on Landry Jones. What's up with that? You know, what's the accent those Boston the Boston? I forgot to got a lot of and Margaret forgot to park a car in the garage, you know, and
Harvard Yard.
Yeah, Harvard Yard.
Gotta put it down in Harvard Yard. You gotta park the car there.
Yeah, and what's up with Brady? You know, but look, you didn't get enough pressure on the quarterback. Boy, those are poor New England accent. That's a Southern New England accent for you.
I think I got the really John F. Kennedy, the very upscale Thurston Howell the Third.
Well, you can nail it. You're educated. I'm not, but
I live there. I can't nail it, but I can't do it like you know, Russillo and Van Pelt when they used to do the. The townies. That was some good stuff. But hey, remember, Steelers fans, mortgage rates are currently at or near all-time lows, just like the Steelers sack totals. It's the bye week. So if in your bye week you're looking to buy your first home, upgrade, downsize, invest, purchase a vacation over refinance, by the way, it's the bye week, so Dave's moving, contact Craig Oxane from First Advantage Mortgage. A lifelong Steelers fan of Pittsburgh native, Craig is a nationally recognized lender. Love the opportunity to help you out. You can call them at 855-961-7763. That's 855-961-7763. Or email Craig at craig@blackandgoldlending.com or apply online at www.blackandgoldlending.com. It's a company, NMLS 2551, NMLS 320399, Illinois Residential Mortgage Licensee, Equal Housing Lender. And, yeah, bye week is a good time to buy a home or move home. So how's that move going for you?
It's happening. The movers will be here in about 30 minutes. So, the only other imitation I have is probably Brady after throwing that touchdown. I probably said, you like apples? How do you like them apples? You know, look, you didn't get enough pressure on Brady. You didn't get him down on the ground. You didn't get enough third and long situations when you had him in third down situations. You couldn't get off the field, and even though the Steelers are getting off the field, you know, under 40% percentage this year, they're not getting enough third downs, and I hate to be doom and gloom with these stats and all, but I mean, for them to only have 8 sacks in what, 3 interceptions, if you go back and look, well, this is another doom and gloom article. Boy, I wonder if we, after this podcast and what I wrote the last week, and probably people jumping out the windows and off the bridges right now, but 11 total sacks in interceptions after the first 7 weeks. I think you have to go back to what did I write, 1998, or I can't remember the year, 1988, off the top of my head. I've been looking at so much history to find a team that was as poor as that was. I mean, you can't plan interceptions, I know, but you can, you know, you have control more over getting pressure. And if you get pressure, those sacks and those interceptions are going to happen. And
think about the three interceptions. One in the opener against the Redskins, where Kirk Cousins, it's the next last play of the game, where James Harrison gets it in the end zone. So it's a meaningless play in terms of the game, not the Steelers' defensive sacks, but stats, but the game. And it probably, if they had reviewed it, he probably doesn't even get the interception. So that's one. Obviously, the Jarvis Jones, Cam Hayward play against Kansas City is 2. And that was a good, big, significant play. That was very meaningful. And Dev, I'm trying to remember what was
the
third?
The other one was Kirk Cousins throwing it right to Shazier in the middle of the field, right?
Oh, right. Yeah, you're right. So they've had one interception since week one. So they have and how many sacks did they have in week one? Did they get how many? Do you remember? Did they have a couple?
Keep talking. I'll get that for you.
Yeah. So I mean,
well, you got to remember they had what, 4 against the Chiefs, right?
4. Well, Cam had 3. Yeah.
And Vince Williams had 1, right?
Yeah. So they got 8. They got 8. So you take the Chiefs game out, they got 2 winners. I mean, I hate to say, you know, take games out, but okay. So the opener, they got an interception, and I'm sure they had probably at least 1 sack.
Zero sacks in the opener.
Okay. So they don't have a sack on the road. How about that?
And the Bengals game was at home, right? So that sack shouldn't even count, right? I mean, you hate to throw things out here, but I mean, let's be real, a 7 to 8 second sack, I mean – You can't count that.
Right, and then the first sack they got was a non-sack. It was 0 yardage. And was that on Carson Wentz? No, that was
on Dalton, right?
Yeah, that was the Bengals sack. So in the first, so let's talk about now meaningful sacks and interceptions. So two meaningful interceptions out of 3, and then, you know, I don't know. I'm not going to dismiss any sacks. They all are meaningful. But you know, the game they won 400-0. It's kind of like I do dismiss 3 of the sacks last year that James Harrison got in the fourth quarter of a game. They're up, you know, 48-10 against the Colts. The bigger point being, they're not making any splash plays.
And they're not making those splash plays when games are tight. It doesn't seem like anybody, in my opinion, a defense should absolutely be able to swarm when you're up more than, let's say, 10 to 12 points, let's say 13 or more points, because of the fact that you have your opposition out of the game plan. They're having to pass a lot. They can't just run the football on you. You can pin your ears back. You can get to go after them on the blitz, because they're going to be facing a lot of second and long situations on top of it. Because you should be able to stack sacks and interceptions when you're up big. A good measure of a defense is how you can get these. Sacks, pressures, and interceptions when the game's tight, and this defense just can't do it. You know, go watch any Minnesota Vikings game and look at the pressure they get on the opposing quarterback in the first offensive possession. I mean, and you're talking about a league now where quarterbacks try to get the football out in 2.4 seconds or less. that's quick to get pressure. You might not get there, but at least maybe you're going to force a throw. And, you know, to hear Keith Butler talk evidently as he did on Tuesday, saying, well, you know, we got go watch and see how many times Brady had to pull down the football. Well, yeah, that's all fine and good, but, I mean, you still let him out of the pocket. So getting pressure and almost getting sacks just doesn't – that's not good enough in these situations.
Well, I mean, it's certainly not good enough when the answer is he ran 3 yards for a first down versus throwing incompletion. So.
Right. I mean, David, I mean, I don't – obviously, I'm not a defensive coordinator in this league, and we're probably a great time to tell our listeners that we have an interview with Chris Hoke coming up here in the second half of the show, one of our favorite guys to talk to. I know definitely one of mine. We talk a lot about the differences and maybe what the Steelers defense needs to do moving forward here. But, you know, there's not a lot. And this has been going on for, what, 3 or 4 years now with this defense. It's amazing when you look at that 40-something sack number from last year and, in essence, how meaningless maybe it was. I mean, because we already talked several times about hey, the outside linebackers only had 5 or 15 sacks last year, and look how many of them came in garbage time. Maybe we need to go back and count when a lot of those sacks came, and whether or not they came with the Steelers with the lead in the game, how much the Steelers were up at that point, and look at the situations involved. Because let me tell you, I was surprised the sack number ended up being that high, and I will once again. They're going to have to really turn the pumps on right now, as they like to say, because if they're going to come anywhere close, I mean, let's face it, this team needs what? What did this team need to average per game? Let's pretend the first 7 weeks didn't happen, that this is now only a 9-week season. How many sacks and interceptions should this defense have after the next 9 weeks?
How many interceptions?
Well, sacks and interceptions. I mean, two and a half sacks a game, right?
You know, obviously the right thing to look at is quarterback pressures, hurries, hits. I mean, you know, because that's the meaningful number. And I will say the Jets game, you know, that's the game I point to where they had 100 yards total the second half. They didn't score any points, even though Cam Hayward didn't play. I don't know what was different about that game and why they were able to be successful, but they were. And sacks are a good barometer, but I think you want to put it all in the right measure. So that's the thing, is against Andy Dalton in that game, they were able to get pressure on Andy Dalton, and I do think it was a big part in them limiting the Bengals offense. And I do think against Fitzpatrick and the Jets, they were able to get pressure, even though it didn't show up. And I do think there were times in the Patriots game, more in the first half, and I think they wore down and the Patriots started to run the ball in the second half, they were able to get pressure and do some good things. But still, the reason sacks matter is because there's yardage loss to go with the down. I mean, you throw an incompletion, you're getting the ball back where you were. I mean, generally on your average, I'm sure the NFL average sack loss is, you know, 5 to 7 yards. And that's, you know, that's significant because it's not just a penalty, it's penalty loss of down. And that's why it matters. But, I would think at the minimum you want to be getting 2 a game. Right. Just a minimum. You're 32 for the season. The Steelers' 2 numbers that we jump on the years before, they got 48 last year. I think they had 33 back-to-back years. That's a minimum.
Right, and absolute minimum for sure. And they're not on pace to even do that. Yeah, look, sacks, the best thing about sacks is the byproduct of sacks. And usually the byproduct of that is a killed drive. You know, normally you're going to be getting off the field in a drive that you get a sack, or you should be, at least. If you're not, shame on you, because of the yardage lost. Because not every quarterback is going to be able to come. Assuming that sack doesn't happen on third down, a lot of quarterbacks and a lot of offenses in this league, you know, 9 times out of 10 aren't going to be able to convert on third and long situations such as that. So that's a byproduct. You just see around the league, almost on a weekly basis when you watch these games, of man, this, you know, look at the pressure that caused this interception, or what was the scheme running that forced the quarterback to throw the ball into this tiny window and the ball bounces up. You see these interceptions that go on a week-to-week basis, and you can't help to think for yourself, man, when's the last time we've seen the Steelers get an interception like that over the course of the last 4 years, you know, where a ball bounces up or something like that. So, you know, it's more than just happenstance or luck, in my opinion. There's a lot that goes on to this and goes into this, and I'm so tired now finally seeing these, you know, and people say, well, welcome to the club, Dave. Look, I understand there's right and wrong times to play, you know, cover three or play a lot of zone or loose coverage. Maybe you do that on second and long situations, really long or third and long situations, to kind of protect it, to do it in front of the chains. But on early downs now, teams will much rather seem to want to throw and get the easy 6 or 7 yards on the Steelers on first down because of them playing off. I think at some point you got to flip the switch and take your chances and say, look, we got to start messing up the timing here with these receivers. We got to make quarterbacks start holding on to the football more than 2.3, 2.4 seconds here. And okay, if we get beat over the top once, maybe twice a game for an explosive play in man coverage, as long as we can toughen up and only give up a field goal instead of a touchdown in those situations, it's just gonna be a chance that we have to take, because we can't afford to be paper cut to death week in, week out, because opposing quarterbacks know they can do that, and that's what they're doing, and that's where I think it's getting tiring, or has been tiring, for several people listening to this podcast when it comes to the Steelers defense.
We'll see if they get it sorted out. Dave, you know, I asked about Eli Rogers, and Eric Hagman tweeted out that you know, he said Ben came just short of saying it was a just short of saying it was a non-football related activity that got Eli Rogers benched. Did some of these guys, you think, they were down in Miami on Saturday night, somebody missed curfew?
Boy, I am. Mike Pursuta tweeted out something similar to that yesterday afternoon, I believe, as well, too. I definitely don't know the answer to that, but I was caught by surprise, and I know you were too, that you don't have Eli Rogers in there in a game that you're already short Marcus Wheaton, in a game that you probably knew going into the game that Sammy Coates wasn't going to give you 40 or 50 snaps. And, oh, yeah, you got Kobe Hamilton out there who gave you a nice performance. I'm not going to knock that at all, but he's not a slot guy. Okay, so, and then, you know, in the second half, you lose Antonio Brown for, you know, however many plays that wound up being because of the quad. There were points and times during that game where you could have used a guy like Eli Rogers. So, very, very interesting. Evidently, Mike Pursuta asked him, or somebody asked Eli Rogers, to kind of expand on the coach's decision, if you will, when they talked to him on Tuesday, and I guess Eli pretty much shied away from doing so. I don't know, you know, if it's going to be worth being a talking point when we return from the bye next Tuesday, but if you think about it, maybe you'll be the one to ask Mike Tomlin point blank, what really happened there?
I got about 20 questions I want to ask Mike Tomlin, and I'm not going to be at that press conference on Tuesday. I'm going to take some vacation because of the Steeler bye week. But I literally thought about changing my vacation plans, because I got a list as long as my arm of things I want to ask Mike Tomlin, starting with, you know, Sean Davis and Eli Rogers for sure.
Well, maybe somebody will think to ask him about that. Not that we're going to get the right answer or any answer, you know, to know what really happened. But, you know, yeah, if he missed a curfew, maybe that's the kind of thing you deal with a team fine, instead of maybe not putting the player out there for.
Yeah, right. Well, and putting the team out there, hanging the team
out there. Yeah, and not having a player, you know, play at least 20, 25 snaps, because would have made a difference in the game? We don't know. But I think he's a better option out there maybe to have as a third guy than Xavier Grimble.
Yeah, and I've come to kind of agree with your, you know, we haven't talked about, we kind of got to wrap things up here to get to Hokey Bro, but I've come to agree with your conclusion that I think Ladarius Green is going to be active for the Ravens game. First of all, let's get this out there, because you know, Charlie and I had a disagreement on the postgame show. I've heard, you know, all the beat writers say they don't expect anything from Ladarius Green. You know, he's just, you know, he hasn't played with the Steelers and whatever. This is not, okay, I 100% disagree. So let me go on record right now saying I expect Ladarius Green to be a big contributor to the Steelers offense in the second half. Ladarius Green is not Senquez Golson. He's not a guy who's never played in the league. He played in the league for 4 years. He was a free agent. He's worked with Phillip Rivers. He knows how to run a pass pattern. We're talking about his physical health. And the fact that, you know, he was on the PUP list, yeah, he didn't practice, but he's in there. The question for him was learning the offense and the verbiage and everything else. So he's had a chance to do that on the PUP list. He's allowed to go to the meetings. He's been in on all these things. So he knows the names of the plays now. He knows how to run the routes. He's, you know, he's been running routes for 4 years in the NFL. I expect him to quickly assimilate into the Steeler offense and be part of this offense. And I realize most people, for whatever reason, don't buy into that. That's that. Let me just boom. That's my second half prediction, Dave. I fully expect him to be a big part of the Steelers offense going
forward. Let's assume he doesn't play against the Ravens, and that's a big assumption right now because he is back practicing. He'll have a practice. He practiced on Tuesday. He's supposed to practice again on Wednesday. So there's two practices, barring any type of setback. You would expect him to practice 3-4 days next week when they return. So there, you know, there is now a and a week ago I probably would have bet you even money that he wouldn't play against the Ravens. So yes, there is a chance that he can play against the Ravens now, but how much can you get him in? So let's just throw out whatever happens against the Ravens in following this bye in week 9. Let's look at the final 8 games of the season. Will he have more or less than 20 catches in the final 8 games?
More.
So you really expect him to be a big part, you know, more than just a two catch a game kind of guy.
He brings something that not only, you know, Jesse James, Xavier Gimbrell, and David Johnson don't bring to the offense. He brings something that Heath Miller didn't bring to the offense.
Let me ask you this: over under 30 in the final 30 receptions in the final 8 games.
Yeah. Yes. 30. That's a good number. I like 30.
I'll take the under. I'll take the under. And this, of course, assumes he played.
Would you take under 20?
No, I wouldn't take under 20. But I would if I took. You know what? I bet the great over under number here for him is 28. I bet. Yeah, that's where I would probably be on the fence. I don't think he'll have. And God, I hope I'm wrong, because they could really use a tight end that'll get them 12, 13 yards average per catch here. I think in the final 8 games, I mean, look, he'd have to average more than 3 catches a game for the final 8 games. Obviously, I mean, if you did 4 times 8, that's obviously 32. I'm not sure they get him out of this, so I would take the under. But I think he can do enough. Contribute enough that maybe it takes enough pressure off of your other guys, AB, you know, hopefully Sammy Coates, a deep threat and yada yada and Eli Rogers. But you know, I just don't think there's enough football to go around for him to get over 30 catches in the final 8 games. But they need something, that's for sure. They need a tight end that can do the things maybe that Gronk can do, and that's asking a lot. I know.
Well, you know, look, I mean, hopefully they get Marcus Wheaton back. Hopefully Sammy Coates is healthy. Hopefully Eli Rogers isn't staying out too late in Lawrenceville, and all these things go the Steelers. I mean, you know, this whole thing, we talk about this 30 point per game offense, and you know, there are a lot of reasons you can say, well, it hasn't happened because of the injuries and everything else. But let's just get to the main point: it hasn't happened. They haven't done it. So they need to do it. They don't need to do it twice and put up, you know, 40 against Kansas City and have the back-to-back 6 touchdown games that Ben had 2 years ago, or you know, the coming off the games he had 9 touchdowns in 2 games. They need to do it week in and week out. They haven't been able to.
Yeah,
that's how.
And before you get to the final, kind of to wrap this up here, my biggest concern right now. Look, I know this offense can put up 30 points. In any given Sunday, the problem with this team is what happens when that doesn't happen. You know, what happens when the offense sputters? Can this team win when the offense has an off day. Look, every offense, is going to have an off week or two during the season. Unfortunately for the Steelers, they've already had really kind of two and a half of those, if you will. You had a game against the Eagles. You had the game against the Dolphins. I don't know what you consider the game against the Patriots. Okay, let's go ahead and count that as being maybe an off week as well, too. And then really, how sharp was the offense really in the win over the Bengals? That was a very losable game, if you ask me. And if not for James Harrison getting that ball out late in the game on a ruled fumble that, you can still kind of question all these weeks later. What's going to happen when this offense doesn't put up 30 points a game? That's my biggest concern.
Yeah, well, it's a good concern because they're not winning games when they don't do that. All right, we're gonna get to Hooky, bro. We're up against it. So we'll come back. We got no beat writer obviously with the bye week, but we got Chris Hoke, former Steelers defensive lineman, joining us next. All right, with the Steelers on the bye week this week, of course we do something a little different than getting a beat writer. We got our man Chris Hoke, former Steeler defensive lineman and part of the Steeler radio network coverage that you hear during each Steeler game. Hokie bro, great to have you back on the Terrible Podcast.
Always a great time to be on with you guys.
Chris, let's start with where this defense is and what you're seeing on a week-to-week basis. And why don't we start at kind of 30,000 feet and your thoughts on the philosophy. We know when you played under Dick LeBeau, it was kind of – there were three tenets there. It was stop the run was the first priority, tackle the catch, and don't allow the big play. And Keith Butler, without saying as much, has generally had a defensive philosophy that kind of still abides by those three principles. And what we've seen under Keith, kind of in his early tenure as defensive coordinator, is particularly last year, as we saw – they weren't able to get to the quarterback a lot by rushing four guys, and they did it with a lot of exotics. They sent a lot of guys out of the secondary, and they put up a big number of sacks in terms of getting 48 sacks on the year.
Yeah,
and this year,
yeah,
they've tried to play what appears to us to be a very vanilla defense, and they've had trouble getting to the quarterback. What are you seeing?
Well, I think last year, as they assessed the 2015 campaign, they saw that, they did very good against the run, but they struggled against the pass. So how could they get better in the passing game? And I feel that they believe that if they played this bend but don't break passing attack and be able to drop more guys, they'd have more success. And they did have more success at first, but the struggle was they weren't getting pressure on the quarterback. So then it put some strain on their DBs, as the season gone on. And if you look at the last two games, the struggle for me really has been for this defense is, they've never wanted to give up the big play. And they hadn't really given up the big play the first 4 weeks of the season, 5 weeks of the season. The last two games, they've given up six or seven big plays, maybe even eight big plays, which really has broken their back. And you saw that with some long passes 2 weeks ago from the Miami Dolphins, Marcus Gray. You saw another one, Jarvis Landry, and you saw that big run, the 62-yard run at the end of the game for the J.E. Those ones broke their back. And then this last week, they were doing great. They were doing well, keeping everything in front of them, playing good defense. And that second drive of the Patriots in the third quarter, where they marched down the field, that one, they had a 25-yard run by LeGarrette Blount. Then that 36-yard strike from Brady to Gronkowski, those big plays, those are things they have to eliminate, and they weren't showing up in the first 4 or 5 weeks of the season.
So in terms of the just in terms of the philosophy, when you look at it, and they have eight sacks in seven games, does that concern – I mean, look, you'd love to have 28 sacks in seven games. Of course, everybody would. But is that in and of itself a statistic that concerns you about their ability to get to the quarterback? Because, let's look at it realistically. The outside linebacker group for the Steelers is not a high pedigree, it's not a great group.
That does concern me. I mean, eight sacks after seven games. I mean, you're looking at last year, they had 48 sacks in a 16-game season. I mean, if they have next week, if they get one sack, that's nine sacks, in the next game, excuse me. If they get nine sacks after 8 weeks, that puts them on track for 18 sacks. That's way off where they were at last year. And in order to be successful in today's NFL, I mean, when teams are throwing the ball over the field, you have to get pressure on the quarterback. If you let the quarterback sit back there and really play 7-on-7, you're not going to win very many ball games. And that's why the Steelers have struggled the last couple of weeks. And you can say, well, Cam Harwood wasn't in there, Shazier's banged up, you have all the excuses in the world. But at the end of the day, you have to get pressure on the quarterback. And your outside linebackers the Steelers have always banked on the outside linebackers getting to the quarterback. That's why we've always been successful. When I was there, went back, all the players that played in the 80s, Kevin Green, Greg Lloyd. I mean, that's how we were successful defensively, with outside linebackers getting pressure on the quarterback, and we aren't getting that right now.
Chris, when you look at this team on first down, specifically talking about the defensive side of the football, not good at all, especially first and 10. You know, they're giving up what I like to call successful plays, meaning the offense is gaining more than 4.5 yards on those plays. And if you do that and you set your defense up in a lot of second and threes or second and fours, second and fives, it's really hard to be successful. And because of that, is today, back when you played, there was a lot of base defense being run on first down. Now you have to dictate what you do based on what the personnel is across from you. When we see these offenses run 11 personnel and 3 wide receivers, and because of that, the quarterbacks will have these short passes out to the right, or these short, you know, kind of slants. Should today's Steelers defense kind of feature more, because it having to play a lot of nickel, should we start seeing more man? I mean, obviously, this team normally likes to play more cover three, a lot of zone coverage underneath, but we saw what Brady and other quarterbacks are doing. Is it time to start playing more man, I guess, is my overall question.
Well, I think two parts of your question. First of all, in the NFL today, you can't give up 4.5, 5 yards on first down. What's happening with the Steelers the last 2 weeks and the 2 losses, their teams are in 3rd and short. And you're seeing the Steelers, what are they in? They're 3rd and long, 10-plus a lot of times. And that's why you're seeing the Steelers in the 20, between 20 and 30% on third down, and other teams 50%-plus on third down the last 2 weeks, is because these other teams are on 3rd and short, 2nd and short. You can't have that. You can't be successful defensively in those situations. And when you're asking me about going man versus cover three, I'll tell you what, going man, you got to press receivers. You got to get up on them. You got to be physical with these guys. And you got to, in the first 5 yards, be all over them. And we're not seeing that. We're seeing 8-yard cushion, 7-yard cushion when it's 3rd and 3. And we've got to be better there. We've got to get up and disrupt the rhythm of the quarterback and the receivers. So when it's 3rd and 3, 3rd and 4, and you're giving that cushion, you're giving them that first down. Even on 1st and 10, when they're throwing these quick little bubble screens, if you're 78 yards off the ball, they're going to get 4 or 5 yards before you even get touched. And so we've got to be better there. We've got to get up and be really disruptive and combative at the line of scrimmage.
When David and I were talking the other day, we were talking about the defense and saying, you know, really it's hard, you know, outside of maybe a little bit more cover two with this defense, and maybe a little less two gapping, of course, which is obvious. No fullbacks in the league. Teams not running at, you know, as often on first down. It's just, they obviously are still running, but probably not percentage when you broke into the league on first down. Because of that, I mean, it's still pretty much, as David pointed out, stop the run, tackle the catch, and don't give up the big play. With all that said, then why, you know, tell us that there, the differences that you've seen schematically that would say, well, that's the reason why the team decided to walk away from Dick LeBeau.
I think with Dick LeBeau, they saw that they really wanted Keith Butler to be the coordinator, and they didn't know how much longer Coach LeBeau would be around coaching. And they didn't want to let Keith Butler go. I mean, I believe he was in the last year of his contract. And so I don't know if it was a philosophy thing, because I think they have kind of the same philosophy, but understanding that there needed to be a couple of changes. They went back from Coach LeBeau was there, where defensive ends played one gap a lot of times. Nose tackles were two gapping, but it wasn't a penetrating defense. It was more of a reading defense. Now you got Cam Hayward and Stephon Tuitt who are pinning their ears back and gapping and getting upfield. The nose tackle still two gaps quite a bit, not as much. So the philosophy has changed a little bit, but the principles are still the same. Some of the techniques are still the same. But if you're asking me, you know, if they switched to Keith Butler because of that, it was more because they didn't want to let Keith Butler go, and knowing that, and not knowing how much longer Dick LeBeau was going to coach.
When you look, you know, talking about press, and we've talked about this a lot, and you know, this goes back to really almost the, you know, the days when you were playing. There's a game, San Diego, maybe it might have been your last year, where we just watched, they came in with no offensive line, and we watched Philip Rivers just throw 7 yard outs all game long at Heinz Field, and the Chargers beat the Steelers. And I, you know, that's kind of the game that I keep going back to, just wondering what was going on. Is nobody paying attention to what's happening even during the game? Do you think it's a talent level on the guys? Because, you know, they're starting to draft and get, you know, when they got Justin Gilbert as well. You know, you've got guys in Artie Burns and Justin Gilbert who, and eventually Sean Davis, and a different skill set there, but who have some of that capability. I don't get it, is basically what I'm telling you, is because at any level you play, the hand fighting on the line of scrimmage and not giving a guy a free release, it's the same in high school football as it is in the NFL, the idea of what you're trying to do. So I just don't get why they don't do it.
I don't get it either. I mean, they've got to get up there and they got to hand fight. They got to get up there and they got to break that rhythm. And, you know, they got big, strong guys right now. I mean, look at the corners we have now. You know, like you said, Artie Burns, Sean Davis, he comes in and plays that nickel. I know he has in the last couple of weeks, but he's played there in the past. And, you know, Justin Gilbert, they're big guys. And so they can get up there and do it. It's a matter of confidence, I think, number one, you know, not wanting to get beat deep and keeping everything in front of you. But they've got to switch that up. They've got to change that, David. They can't keep throwing those 7 yards out, because that was a philosophy in the past, was keeping, let me get those 7 yards out, 7 yard outs. But we're going to have a playmaker that's going to get a sack on the quarterback and put him behind the chains, and we're getting the third and long. They don't have that playmaker up front right now. They don't have the guy that can come off the edge, the James Harrison in his prime, or the Joey Porter, or you know, Lamar Woodley, or whoever it was that could come off the edge, or Troy Palomalu in the back end who can get an interception. We just don't have those guys right now. So playing that philosophy of just giving that up and giving that cushion and hoping that at some point we're going to make those plays, it's not going to happen right now. So we've got to switch up our philosophy.
Let me ask you a question about what insights you can give about Mike Tomlin as a coach, and you know, you mentioned Sean Davis, and it was perplexing, I'm sure, to you and me and to Dave and you know, a lot of our listeners, that you have a guy who's playing all the time, and then he gets dinged up a little bit, he doesn't play, and then he goes from being a, you know, integral part of the defense to not playing, and. You would have thought that, particularly in the game against this game in particular, you know, against those tight ends, he would have been a useful guy. Yeah. You would have thought that Justin Gilbert would be a useful guy. He didn't play. Eli Rogers was apparently 100% healthy, and he didn't play when you had Marcus Wheaton on the bench, not active. You get your receiver somewhat dinged up. Kobe Hamilton brings a different skill set as a tall receiver. But, I had heard all week long that Eli Rogers wasn't part of the game plan. Does Mike Tomlin, for lack of a better way to say this, does he send messages, or is there a chance Eli Rogers did something wrong and, you know, they already had seven inactives and this is his way of disciplining him? Are there things going on that we're not aware of?
There might be. I don't know if there's sending messages. I mean, you see what Ben Roethlisberger said this past week, that he needed to focus in a little more. Eli Rogers is a guy who showed up late in the preseason. He showed up early in the season before he got hurt. And left me surprised and perplexed why he wasn't in this ball game. When the receivers were dropping and we're short on receivers. There has to be a reason, whether it's an injury. I mean, look at all the guys that were inactive this week. They were all guys that just couldn't play, and so they had to suit up guys, and maybe he wasn't 100%.
He did say he was 100%. He said it after the game, and he said it yesterday.
There has to be something internal that he did. I don't have the answer for that, Dave, but there has to be something internal of the reason why he didn't play, because he's a guy who's shown up. He's a guy who's proven in the first month, 2 months of the season, that he could produce. So there's got to be something internal with him and Mike Tomlin and Todd Haley that is the reason why he didn't play.
Chris, one final question for me before we get you out of here. We heard Ben Roethlisberger a few weeks ago talk about the physical practices, and Tomlin came out. You know, they both handled that real well, I thought, when all said was said and done. Of course, they did. You know, we don't know how much of a distraction that may have served. They went out and lost to, I believe it was the Dolphins that next week there. But regardless, your final year was 2011. That, of course, was the year of the new CBA. So you really only got to play and practice, you know, one season, if you will, with those new rules. What do you think, from what you've seen in that one season and from the players that you've kind of talked to, being on the other side of the microphone now, is there a problem with the way Tomlin does things in practices, either during the off-season program or in season when there's a rule that states how many padded practices you could have?
I don't think there's anything he's doing wrong, Dave. I think, you know, every other NFL team, for the most part, does the same thing. You know, I believe you have 11 practices to go pads in the first 14 weeks, and, you know, Mike's done a great job of managing that. In my opinion, you're just talking about the comments of Ben and you know, practice being too physical. You know, I know that's not the collective sentiments of the whole team. I know that there's other guys in that locker room that feel that, you know, if you want to be a physical football team, you've got to practice physical. And if you're not being physical out there, it's, you know, when you're in practice and you're in helmets, it's hard to practice keeping your pad level down. It's hard to practice playing perfect technique, because that's going to show up on Sundays, because you're not worried about a guy coming firing off on you. And so you don't have to play in perfect technique. And so you've got to be a veteran team in order to practice without pads like you would if you had pads on. And for some reason, that's not translating because of the new CBA, when you can't go full pads every single practice. They've got to find a way to get these young guys and get the fellows on that team to practice every single practice with perfect technique. And there's a way to do that. I did it. There's guys that did that when we played, that even though we weren't in full pads sometimes, we went out there and did our best to keep our pad level down, because if you don't do it in practice, it's not going to show up in the game.
Hooky, man, great stuff. Appreciate the time. Love watching you do your thing on the TV side. You know, they keep us good-looking guys on the radio. They put the pretty guys on television.
No, I can't believe you guys stay up so late, man. I did my post game on Sunday, and I was driving home, 9:45, and I hear you and Charlie still going strong. Holy smokes.
Yeah, another hour of that. We'll trade jobs next year. How about that?
Nah, I'm good. I'm good where I'm at.
Chris, you look good, too. All right, Chris, you look like you could play cornerback now for the Steelers. You absolutely look great.
Oh, thank you, bud. I appreciate you guys. I'll be on with you guys anytime.
All right, man. Thanks so much for your time. All right, good stuff, as always, from Hokie Bro. And, you know, let me remind you once again, Steelers Nation, mortgage rates currently near all-time lows. If you're looking to buy your first home, upgrade, downsize, invest, purchase a vacation home, or refinance, contact our buddy Craig Oxen from First Advantage Mortgage. Craig's a lifelong Steeler fan, a Pittsburgh native. He's a nationally recognized lender that loved the opportunity to help out our podcast listeners. You can call him today at 855-961-7763. That's 855-961-7763. You can email him at craig@blackandgoldlending.com, or just apply online at www.blackandgoldlending.com. Company NMLS 2551, NMLS 320399, Illinois Residential Mortgage Licensee, Equal Housing Lender. And Dave, you know, good stuff from our boy Chris Hoke. I guess we ought to wrap things up.
Yeah, and always great to have him on. I could talk football with him all the time. I know he's a longtime listener to the podcast as well. He reads Steelers Depot quite a bit as well, too, and I hope a lot of the listeners are as well. And listening to David's show on 970 ESPN every afternoon in addition to that. Folks, we ran a little bit long today. We apologize. You can follow me on Twitter at Steelers Depot. Follow David on Twitter at David M. Todd. Follow the show at Terrible Podcast. Email the show, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. If you'd like to donate and help us out with the support here as well, you can do so by going to SteelersDepot.com and hitting that donate button up in the navigational bar. And until Friday, take us out of here.
All right, good luck with the move. And as always, thanks for listening to The Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.